not dust. They're quite as simple as it seems. A person signs into the technical net by giving John and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means that you do have a question or a comment for the net. Another thing, we don't worry about whether or not a question is too dumb. Don't worry about that. Also, we make a sincere effort to try to answer people's questions who sign in at the beginning of the net. In the first hour, we try to give them at least a brief answer. At the end of that hour, John goes to the mailbag for the guys that are just getting their license, don't have a way of getting on the air yet. They ask questions, and John selects about three of those questions for the ones that have general interest, and we go to those questions. Paul, WS2N, our space expert, then tells us what National Aeronautics and Space Administration, what has been going on in space and radio astronomy and extraterrestrial intelligence, that kind of material. At the end of those three objects, three things, we then go to slightly more serious material. And it's not to everyone's liking, we know that, some of the material, but or we go deeper into the subjects that were covered during the first hour that didn't get a chance to really give enough of an answer. Some of the things like how the decibels work or how does the Smith chart work really require a deeper explanation, if you know what I mean. And so we should all try to once every minute create an interruption where you hear all four beeps and maybe another second or two beyond, so that the whole what is it now, echo link, the whole echo link, and also the IRLP systems can reset. We could also try to leave enough of a delay so that people out of the area have a chance to sign in. We are from time to time hearing that people out of the area have quite a bit of difficulty signing in because of insufficient delay. Okay, once again, you're going to give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes, meaning you do have a question or a comment. A typical sign-in would sound like this, WE2PJF, E2, and yes. Give me your call letters and name right now. E2RIW, listening.
WA2PJF, Vito, Bayshore, yes.
Okay, we certainly got Vito. Who is the other person that Vito double with?
WA2OIY, yes. Yes.
Okay, that was Joe. But do we know him? Okay, we got Vito and Joe. Who else? Somebody tried to sign in, didn't quite make it. So Vito and Joe, and who is the next person? I think there's a mobile station out there, and because of the way the voting system is working, he's not coming through. One more try. Is there anyone else that signs into the TechNet at this time besides Vito and Joe? Give me your call letters right now, K2LIW.
WS2N, thank you, Paul. Good evening, Dick.
Very fine, Paul. I know there's another person trying to sign in, so after we handle Vito and Joe, we'll try again to find out who that other person is. Vito, what's going on in Bayshore? Bayshore Spa, I'm going to call it. One of the garden spots of Long Island. W2PJF, K2IW. You got it, Vito.
And to the exchange, off the pole.
This evening I have a question in reference to wire gauges being used with dipole antennas. As you know, wire gauges are very important. For example, electrical work in a building, a certain gauge wire, as you know, is required to operate a piece of equipment requiring X amount of power. Like a stove, for example, would take number 8 and number 6 gauge, and a dishwasher number 12. There's a reason for that, the circular mill area and so forth. Of course, the length of the wire makes a difference and so forth. My question is, with that in mind, let me drop. A dipole antenna, I built one last year. I replaced one last year. It had 14 gauge kind of fell. So I took the liberty of replacing the wire itself at the proper length with eight gauge solid copper wire, and the antenna is much more sturdy, and it has a longer life now. And I coated it with the special coating that High Gain Antenna Company and Chris Graff puts out to protect the metal. My question is, it might be imagining this, but the antenna is functioning outstandingly well. I also have a dipole on 75, 80 meters, again using the 14-gauge stranded wire, which I haven't replaced. Does it make a difference, the circular area, the gauge of the wire being larger, will the antenna perform better as opposed to gauge being thinner? That's my question. Back to you, Professor.
I think the answer is almost no. When you and I choose the gauge of wire to build a dipole like 80 meters, it is my belief that our major choice requirement is for physical strength. You're supporting 132 feet length of wire, probably a piece of RG8 coax cable hanging in the beginning and in the middle, and a certain amount of weight and tension and whatever. The exact answer with reference to dipole bandwidth and dipole efficiency, you get a little bit of a hint if you go to the so-called Brown and Woodward curves. This is a set of curves in which the impedance of a monopole on an infinite piece of sheet of metal, by the way, remember now that a dipole is really a pair of monopoles back to back. So everything you read off the Brown and Woodward curve when it comes to impedance, you double the numbers when it comes to a dipole, and it gives you the exact numbers. And these Brown and Woodward curves are a whole bunch of curves on a chart where the horizontal axis is how long is the wire in degrees. 90 degrees is a quarter wave, 180 degrees is a half wave, for instance. So at your particular frequency, you measure the number of feet of your wire, you figure out what the wavelength, one wavelength is 360 degrees, and you do a division, and you go to the chart. The vertical axis tells you how many ohms you get when you're looking at the resistive chart, and there's also a second chart that goes there, shows you how many ohms you get of reactance versus length. Let me drop. So, the Brown and Woodward curves go from everything from about a 4-to-1 ratio of diameter to length, all the way up to 1,000-to-1. There's a whole bunch of curves in there. I don't think the curves go beyond 1,000-to-1. A piece of 14-gauge wire on 80 meters, I don't know the exact numbers, but you and I can calculate it, it's probably more than 1,000-to-1. As you get up to numbers like 500-to-1 and 1,000-to-1 and 2,000-to-1, the rate at which the resistive component and the reactive component changes is pretty darn slow. So it's not a whole lot is happening. If you really wanted a super broadband dipole at 80 meters, there's a bunch of ways you can do that by going to the so-called broadbanding dipole techniques that are in the AROL antenna book. There's ways if you can hook up pieces of coax cable as stubs and whatever to get more bandwidth. I guess I'd better first tell you where you get the Brown and Woodward curves. Chapter 4 of almost every issue of the last 4 issues of the Antenna Engineering Handbook, Chapter 4, will have the Brown and Woodward curves. But if you don't have the Antenna Engineering Handbook, you can go to a website, which is the Tom Williams website, WA1MBA, Whiskey Alpha 1 Mike Bravo Alpha .org. You go to that so-called microwave website of Dr. Tom Williams, Whiskey Alpha 1 Mike Bravo Alpha .org. At the bottom of his page, you'll see something called the K2RIW Yagi and Dipole information or something like that. And you click on that, and you'll see the Brown and Woodward curves, and you'll also see an article on how you can get a absolutely perfect impedance match to your particular dipole made out of your materials. If you want your dipole to have a 1.0001:1 standing wave ratio, that article will tell you how to do it. It's a well-kept secret that some very simple...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Some very simple techniques you add to a dipole, and you can, at your favorite frequency, make it an absolutely perfect impedance match. No matter how you built the dipole, no matter whether the materials are too short, too long, too fat, or whatever. When it comes to pure physical techniques for broadbanding a dipole, people have done the so-called birdcage technique, where you have about four or five or six wires all parallel to each other for the dipole, all held together periodically with some kind of a cage-like device, some kind of a spreader-like device. And now you can fool the RF wave into thinking you've made it out of a six-inch diameter piece of copper tubing, if you know what I mean. That's for a 132-foot-long dipole at 80 meters, very few of us have got the resources to do that. In the other direction, that's what happens when you go fat, and if you went to that six-inch diameter squirrel cage, bird cage of individual wires to make a dipole, I think you'd see, let me pick a number, a 20% increase in bandwidth. Nothing to really write home about. Until you get a substantial fraction of a wavelength, like an eighth of a wavelength or a quarter of a wavelength in diameter, a dipole doesn't become super broadband until you do that. On 80 meters, that's a pretty heroic effort. You and I are not going to do that. But for the guys that are trying to make a dipole invisible, and they start going to 20 gauge, 30 gauge, 36 gauge wire to make it invisible, real fine wire, your first fear would be because the wavelengths in diameter are getting so small, the dipole would get very, very narrow band. It doesn't do that. Let me drop. The only thing that really happens when you start going to 30 gauge wire, so to speak, to try to make it invisible, is that yes, it's a hell of a lot less strong. You better be using a very light transmission line going to it, or some method of suspending the transmission line so the weight of it's not on the wire. Or you could use the more intelligent technique. There's nothing magic about feeding a dipole in the center. You can feed it 10% off center, 50% off center. You can feed it to the outer edge if you've got the right kind of a balancing device and the right kind of impedance matching device. The dipole itself gives you full performance no matter where you feed it. It doesn't have to be fed in the center. For traditional reasons, we do that, but it doesn't have to be. So a piece of 30-gauge wire fed at one end in the end-fed-zip manner would give you nearly full performance. The only thing, as I said, you start worrying about when you go to real fine wire is physical strength is the first thing you're going to run into. Let me drop. The second thing you're going to run out is that because of the skin effect and because of the much, much smaller diameter wire, the ohmic resistance of the wire is going to start going up. So by way of the wire tables that are in the Radio Amateur's Handbook, you can easily find out how many ohms per 1,000 feet each gauge of copper wire is going to give you. Because of skin effect, where the RF doesn't penetrate all the way through the wire, you're going to have to multiply those numbers by some kind of a factor, 2-to-1, 3-to-1. And so if your particular wire is giving you some number of ohms per 1,000 feet, you calculate how many ohms per 132 feet for your dipole, and if that turned out to be 10 ohms, that's something you can definitely use. If the calculated resistance of the wire, because the wire is so small in diameter, is 10 ohms, and if you know that your dipole set in the center is going to give you something like a 70-ohm impedance, and 10 ohms of it is a resistive loss, it's not too difficult to do the mathematics on that, and maybe the answer is 20% of the power is lost in the resistance of the wire, and the other 80% is going to be radiated. I'm rounding up the numbers, but you see the process. And at first, 80% efficiency on a dipole sounds really bad. Well, that's about 1.5 dB of loss. So the guy who's got a well-calibrated S-meter, and he's looking at your signal strength, and you first transmit with your dipole made out of 8-gauge wire, and then you calculate, then you transmit with your dipole made out of 30-gauge wire, and the two antennas are at roughly the same altitude, roughly the same orientation. He doesn't need a lot of property to do this test. And he's going to find a 1.5 dB of difference in signal strength, which is about 1/4 of 1 S unit on his S meter, except for rare indications, or rare situations. He's not going to see very much of a difference. So as I see it,
repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
So as you can see, Vito, wire gauge is primarily strength, a little bit of difference in electrical performance, but not much. And on top of that, covering the wire your 14 gauge household wire, a lot of guys will ask the question, will the antenna work better with the rubber insulation on or should I take it off? And that's a minor difference. The RF energy goes down through whatever is the insulator until it sees some copper, and then it does its thing. The RF energy doesn't see the insulator on an 80 meter or a 40 meter dipole, if you know what I mean. You can cover it with various materials to get rid of the tarnishing of the wire, the copper oxide that forms on the outside, which is primarily what you're doing when you do that. What you're doing is physical beauty. You'd like to have a nice, shiny-looking copper dipole. Performance-wise, I don't think it makes any difference, but I'm not positive on that, but I'm reasonably sure it doesn't. Even if you had a pretty thick layer of copper oxide and it looked, green and ugly on the outside, that's just another form of insulator. Whether you make the insulator the green goo that you get on top of copper after a whole lot of years, or leaving the rubber on, it's almost about the same on RF performance. So that's not where it happens, if you know what I mean. Bunch of opinions there, Vito. Drag your feet a little bit in case other people have done some experiments with dipoles and they want to give us the benefit of their knowledge. To be to PJF with a little bit of delay. K2LIW in the Tech Man. Looks like nobody else has any comments on this one, Vito. You got it.
Okay, very good. Very good. Overall, the answer you're giving me is, in essence, that there's nothing to be gained by going to a larger gauge wire other than strength. Because I was contemplating in taking my 80-meter dipole down and do the same thing with that as I had done with the 40-meter dipole, but I'm not gaining anything. Okay. The covering I had made mention is put out by a Mosley antenna company. It's called Antenna, Clear Antenna Guard or something, Weather Guard. And you brush it on and it keeps the metal under the weather guard nice and clean and shiny and protected from the weather. And I have me drop for a second. I have a Mosley Tri-Band TA-33 senior beam. It's about 23 years old, and it looks like it just came out of the box. And I put that weather guard on from day one, and it's very shiny. It gleams in the moonlight, and I have the same with a 2-meter beam. So that's the reason for that, other than having the copper sulfate build up on the copper. That's the green we're talking about. So, okay, that's it. I won't slow anybody else down. You answered my question. I'm wasting my efforts to change the gauge. That's what I wanted to know about, and I'm gaining nothing really in actuality. So thank you so much, Professor. I appreciate your help. You've been always, you're always helpful, and thank you for your time. This is WA2PJF standing by for you.
Very fine, Vito. Who is that just signed in?
AC2VUM, good evening. Yes, with a question.
Very fine, Alan. Glad we waited long enough to make sure we didn't skip anybody. You're number three on the list. We've already gone through number one, as you know. And, hey, John, it sounds like Vito is a happy customer. We got to send him a bill. That's a joke, Vito. And when it comes to the weather guard from Mosley, putting it on a 80-meter dipole made out of copper wire, I don't think you're gaining much. When you put it on your Mosley beam, I think you are gaining something. Most of these beams that we build have pieces of telescoping tubing. And without some kind of a weather guard, the pieces of tubing that telescope together can easily build up aluminum oxide, start becoming an insulator, not making good contact, and that could help performance, hurt performance. Also, if you take some of the kinds of antennas like the KLM Yagi, I can't remember the brand name of this, 432 megacycle Yagi, which had a log periodic cell to it. In other words, the so-called Drillin element was four individual Drillin elements with a whole bunch of crisscross, log periodic like feed structures, whole bunches of these little aluminum strips that were held together with screws touching the elements. And their aluminum oxide, I have personally measured degradation of the performance of that antenna. So whether you put no locks or weather guard or any other kind of material on those junctions to slow down the buildup of the aluminum oxide. oxide. You get good aluminum to aluminum contact. Definite merit in doing that. On top of that, you, Vito, are a guy that takes pride, and I'm sure you'd like your Mosley bean to stay nice and shiny in the years coming, as opposed to the, you know, after 10 years, aluminum out in the weather can start looking kind of homely. So there's a bunch of reasons for doing the weather guard on antennas like that. But on the dipole, I don't think you need it. A bunch of opinions. Let's see what Joe's got to say. It's an H-U-R-Y-Y. What's going on over there on the South Shore, Joe? Joe?
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Joe, by the way, is one of our best Long Island digital television DXers. He's got a rotary beam on the house with a low noise amplifier on it. And so from time to time, he gets digital television from long distances away. Television DXing in the analog television days was pretty popular. In my area of Long Island nowadays, my town, for instance, I can't find one single on the roof operating television aerial other than the one that's on my house. I'm one of those rare individuals who's still watching over-the-air broadcast television in my town. As Eric has brought to our attention earlier today, people in other towns have a much higher ratio. He said, if I go to Brentwood, I'm going to find a lot more real aerials, whereas in Huntington, my section of Huntington, Dix Hills, I can't find one other than mine. That makes me stand out. Okay, Joe, the B2LYY, T2LIW, you got it, Joe.
Well, what I have to say is good evening, Dick. And I'm not sure if the courtesy tone is going to apply to me on coming in on IRLP or not. Maybe they will. My question is, I'm looking for polypropylene rope, black polypropylene type of rope. I was told from an answer to a question I asked the company weeks ago that this is good to use outdoors and it won't degrade like white nylon. Why will degrade with UV rays? I want to use it to be able to support a dipole. I tried Home Depot, couldn't seem to find that small of a gauge in there. They had like big braided stuff, but it had nothing small like that. Maybe somebody else out there might have any of these or something like they're looking, but something like 1/8 inch black polypropylene type rope, or any kind of support rope that will not be affected by UV rays. I prefer to have it black in color. Back to you.
Very fine, Joe, and John recognized. I'm going to go to you in a second, John. I know of at least two places where you can get it, Joe. At one half, at least, of all the flea markets on Long Island, there's one coming up by Limark. There's a guy who shows up who sells ropes, all kinds of ropes. He's got what you're looking for. On Long Island, for the rest of the days of the year, I think it's called Turnpike Marine. There's a place that sells marine hardware, which is, I'm going to make a guess now, approximately a mile to a half mile west of Route 110 on Jericho Turnpike, on the north side of Jericho Turnpike. There's this little old store that's been there for a zillion years called Turnpike Marine. You go in there, and he's got a zillion kinds of ropes. And the ropes that you see in the store are only one-third of the ropes he's got. He's got zillions of rolls of the stuff in the attic and in the basement of that building. And so he's got the black rope of various diameters made out of polypropylene, made out of nylon, made out of potlash. He's got ropes. So pretty sure if you go to Turnpike Marine, and I'd like to believe he's in the phone book, you'll be able to find him. And with the instructions I just gave you, I'm pretty sure you will find it. But by that name, you just get into that neighborhood. And if you can't find it, just start asking him. Here's Garage. Where's Turnpike Marine? He's been there for a zillion years. Let's see now. I can't think of his name all of a sudden. Boise? Yeah. The guy who runs the place, his first name is Boise. Now, let's see, John, you know where you can get some of those kinds of ropes. I bet you there's a couple of websites and eBay or Amazon. KC2WGB, K2LAW, go ahead, John.
KC2WGB, I think, yeah, you have already covered it. Marine Supply, especially if they specialize in any kind of sail craft, they will have it, exactly what you need. So, you got it covered. KC2WGB, back to you, Dick.
KC2YDT,
Thomas. KC, very fine, John. KC2YDT, I think it is. Give that to me phonetically. I should know you after all these years. K2RAW.
handled that.
Very fine, Matt. Go ahead with your information on the ropes that Joe can find.
My suggestion is to look online for NUVO Rescue Supply. NUVO Rescue Supply. The gentleman that owns and operates the business is actually an Express operator, and he has every single rope you could possibly imagine. And it's going to give you a good price from another ham operator to another. If you look online, you get NUVO, as in NUVO Rescue Supply.
Well, Matt, are you telling us to find this on a website or in the Long Island phone book? It sounds like you're saying NUVO Rescue Supply. We hear the Rescue Supply. We keep missing that one word. N-E-W-B-O is what it sounds like. You may have to give it to us phonetically. So how is Joe going to find NUVO Rescue Supply? Phone book or an email address? KC2YDT, K2RIW. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, you're going to look online, and it's NUVO, November Echo, Whiskey, Bravo, Romeo, Uniform, South Hotel, NUVO, Rescue Supply.
Wow, okay, Newberg, N-E-W-B-R-O-G-H, if I understand correctly. Newberg Rescue Supply. It's a good thing I asked you to spell that. We would have never found it otherwise. Alrighty. And also, when it comes to parachute cords, which are made out of nylon, some of those come in a black style, because you sound like you want some fairly small diameter cord. It sounds like you're doing some kind of a support of an antenna, and you don't want the rope to have got a lot of wind load and a lot of weight. Is that what's going on here, Joe? We're more than curious as to what you're building. And I hope it's not a hangman noose. That's H-2-R-Y-Y. That's a joke. H-2-R-I-W.
H-2-S-P-X.
Hello?
Anyway, Chef, or whatever first. I'm trying to support the end of my 80-meter dipole, which I've had for a while. And I was using 1/8-inch crab line, the stuff you could just regularly go out and buy in a marine store. And I found that after having it outside for five or six months, the sunlight would destroy the stuff. It would turn it into powderized stuff. And you could actually break it in your hand by pulling it. So that stuff isn't going to work anymore. So that's what I'm doing. Trying to reinstall my 80-meter dipole.
Very fine, Joe. Good luck with that operation. We had two more people sign in. One of them was Rich and 2EO, but before that we heard something that sounded like K2SDX or N2SVX. If it's SDX, I guess it's Joe. Let's find out who that was. The SDX question mark. Give me your full call and name and your comment on the subject. K2RIW and TechNet. My name is Dick.
N2EO is trying to get an answer.
Okay, that was a quadruple. I heard N2MB, I heard KC2YDT, I think SDX was attempting it. One of the time phones. SDX first, give me your full call and name, sir.
SDX, the name is Chris, the call is 02, Sierra Delta X-ray. There's a gentleman on Common Green. Gentleman on eBay, his name is the Rope Guy. He has all kinds of ropes for every application, and he has a specific one that is mold resistant and camo green, perfect for putting up antennas.
Okay, QYW also heard. Hey Chris, that's good information. The Rope Guy. I think you're saying he's on the internet. The Rope Guy. I think it's somebody like that. I think it's the guy that shows up at our flea markets here on Long Island. Okay, the next two guys in order were Rich and Barry, and then we're going to go to QY. KQLAW in that order. Rich, N2EO, go ahead with your information. KQLAW.
Hey, Jim.
Hey,
N2EO.
Wire on the end of the dipole with proper egg insulators at the end works like a charm. a slight difference in tuning. In other words, the fact that you've got wire at the end after the end egg insulator instead of a piece of string means there's a little bit of extra capacitance at the end of the dipole. As such, the dipole will tune itself a little bit lower in frequency. There's at least two ways you can compensate for that. Go ahead and shorten the dipole a little bit, or just do a little bit more tuning of your antenna tuner. So wire support works like a charm, doesn't interfere with the radiation pattern or the efficiency or whatever. Let's see what Matt's got to say on all this. KC2, YDT, what's your favorite kind of rope and what's the method of suspending a dipole? K2LAW, go ahead, Matt.
I just wanted to add to my future comments as well. The guy's name is Nicky. He's an extra as well, owns his own company, has a bunch of antennas. He's also a technical rescue specialist. His call is November 2, Romeo, Sierra. And his phone number is 845-561-4264. And he would know anything you could possibly have questions for when it comes to rope and steel and all that stuff. He's definitely the guy to ask. Okay, YDT, back to that.
I thank you, Matt. Some more good information. So as I see it now, Joe's got about four places where he can get the rope of various kinds. And so good luck with that project, Joe. I'm hearing a little bit of static in the background. In fact, on Joe number 2, KC2YQIW, I was hearing a fair amount of static on his signal. So I think the wind is blowing the antenna tonight. Okay, the next person on the list, I didn't think I skipped anybody. It's going to be Alan. KC2 is a Zebra Uniform Mike from Fishkill, New York. He's a long distance away by our standards. Go ahead, Alan. KC2 with ZUM, K2LAW, the tech man.
Okay, good evening, Dick, and good evening to the rest of the men here. Yes, I had a quick question, and I have been asking around and getting some opinions from some people, and as I mentioned earlier, I'm in the process of setting up a Echolink node up here, and I just wanted to know if anybody had any opinions on Alinco. I was going to use that particular rig actually for the receiver, transceiver for the node. And as I mentioned, I had been asking around and talking to different people, and I did speak a couple of days ago with Rich, I think it's in Tulio, I believe it is. And before releasing it for any feedback, I just want to let Rich know that I was in contact with Alinco, and that problem that they had some time ago about not honoring any of their equipment outside of warranty has changed. They will in or out, they will repair if needs to be. That was just a temporary problem that they were having, and there were other reasons for that. So basically that is my question for the evening. So let me drop. This is KC2ZUM from Cold, Fishkill, New York.
Okay. Hello, Fishkill. Pretty fine. KC2 ZUM, K2RIW back in the TechNet. The I'm very unhappy about the fact that the antenna pattern and the obstacles in between this repeater, which is on the Queens-Nassau border, Queens County and Nassau County on Long Island, right on that border on a very tall building. For whatever reason, the signal doesn't get very well up to Fishkill, which I'm guessing is around 40 airline miles. I sure wish Alan had an RF link to this repeater and the other repeaters in the New York City area. But for the time being, Alan wants to be involved in this particular TechNet and other things going on in this repeater. Therefore, he's doing it by Echo Link. Therefore, Alan really wants to know, what's your favorite Echo Link hardware? Are you doing it by a computer in a particular program, in a particular plug-in card? Are you doing it with the Alinco setup and so on? So the guys who are using Echo Link and familiar with Echo Link, what to Alan as to the best way for him to do it. Please give me your call letters right now. And we're going to give a long enough delay after we do get the sign-ins for that so that people out of the area should get the opportunity to give us that information. So with your Echo Link information, give us your call letters right now. K2RAW in the Texan. My goodness, did we get a lot of replies. Let's try that again. Anybody out there with information on Echo Link, the best way to do it, give me your call letters right now. K2RAW. I'm a little amazed by that. Rich N2EO, you've apparently used the Alinco Echo Link. Give us a few words as to what you like about it, what you don't like, and so on. Maybe you know some other brand names. N2 Echo Oscar, K2RAW, Brad Rich.
Alinco and Echo Link, you know what? But I was saying to Alan, I had some Alinco equipment, and he asked me what the quality was. I thought it was okay. It would seem good. I've got their 10 meter rig, their 10 meter rig, and I have their 220 rig, and
okay, thank you for that information, Rich. And Rich, you did drop out about 5 or 6 times, very briefly. I'm thinking you're on a handy-talky, and you're probably upstairs in your house. I sure wish you were using your main rig where you came through a little bit louder tonight, but more than good enough, not to worry. All righty. It looks like we're not getting much information on this particular subject tonight, as I see it, Alan. Alan, because we've gotten such a poor reply on the subject, you're allowed to come back and ask it again, either later on tonight or next Sunday, because I don't think we're giving you much service on this one. And as you do finally select your favorite kind of Echo Link and actually go out and try it, also come back and let us know what you like and what you don't like about it. I think the people who are in the hinterlands using IRLP or Echo Link to try to sign into this particular net, it is the second best way of doing it. If you can do it by RF, most of the time you get through. The people who are far away and have to get through by way of the other two modes, because we sometimes get very excited and talk on top of each other, don't give enough delay time, the people with those other modes do find it a little bit more troublesome. There's pros and cons to all these things. Obviously, once you're on Echo Link, you can talk all over the world, so that's a huge advantage. So back to you, Alan, and you're allowed to come back because I don't think we're getting you very good service on this one. KC2CUM, K2RAW, the Tech Man.
Okay, Dick, thanks. I think there was somebody else trying to break in there, so let it go back to them. As Rich did say, and it was hard copying him a little bit there, from a hardware point of view, I've been hearing some thumbs up on it and whatnot, and I was just trying to just gather as much info as possible before making the purchase of it. So we were discussing a few other things that day, but that was the primary thing there. As you know, I'm on Echo Link right now, and it's working pretty good, but as I said, we're just in the process of setting up a node, and we're just looking for a good rig to do it that was reliable. And I had some other rigs here that I was going to use, but I wanted something that I didn't want to tie up a dual bander or any of my Motorola equipment just for that, you know, a real good radio. I was just looking for something low-end that was reliable that would be on all the time. And that's about it. So I'll just let it sit for the moment and move on to the rest of the group there. And we do thanks for the opportunity to raise the question. This is KC2VUM. Back to you.
Okay. I heard somebody that sounds like HMM. We'll be picking up with you in a second then, sir. Alan, whatever you're doing right now to get through an echo link is sounding quite good. So give me a couple of quick words as to what you're using right now and why you don't want to keep using it. I'm guessing that it ties up a particular rig and you don't want to tie up that rig. So what are you using right now? Because it's sounding quite good. KC2ZUF, K2LIW in the deck, man. Out of curiosity, you still there, Alan? KC2ZUM?
Yes, I am. And I'm not sure if there's an issue going on with EchoLink or the internet, but it seems like every now and then, every transmission that I'm receiving this evening has been dropping out. Back to you.
I'm leaving enough delay time to make sure everything is reset properly. So maybe you didn't hear the question that I asked, Alan, is that what are you using right now? Your EchoLink link that you're using to us right now sounds quite good. And so maybe you don't want to tie up that particular piece of equipment and what's going on. What are you using right now? Because it sounds quite good. KC2ZUM, K2LIW in the tech man.
Okay, what I'm currently using right now is just an old Dell computer and with its natural sound card put in there. And I'm using Yamaha MG-102 external microphone mixer. And the output of that is going into the input of the sound card. And I'm using a Shure dynamic microphone, which is on a boom. And that's what's feeding the input of the mixer. And that's pretty much it. And everything else is just hooked up to the internet from there on a files connection. And it took some doing to match this, because a lot of times when you're running an external mixer into the sound card, sometimes you have issues. But that's pretty much it. And I do have the Tigertronic, the SignalLink board, which I purchased a couple of weeks ago, and that's what I'm going to be using in the circuit there for my node. Back to you, Dick.
Very fine, Alan. That's a pretty good setup. And it works very well. I've heard a number of people signing in by EchoLink, which have sometimes rather garbled-sounding audio, too low, too high, in amplitude, clipped and whatever. Looks to me like you've solved all those problems. Very well done. One of the people who tried to sign in two transmissions ago, I only heard the suffix. It sounded like HMM, Hotel Mike Mike. Whoever that was, give us one more try with your full set of call letters. K2RIW, listening. Okay, the P2HMM, Horse Mounted Mobile. Never heard of you. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, Dick, as far as the EchoLink stuff goes, I'm running EchoLink version 2.0.908. And you can get that by logging on to echolink.org. And as far as what I'm using the sound cards in the computer with the homebrew interface, which is a couple of transformers to isolate around loops. And a homebrew box circuit to use for the boost to it. With that, I just got to run out of here real quick. Talk to you later, Dick. And, I miss you from where I'm at the workplace.
Very fine. Let me let it drop. Very fine, Charlie. I hope to see you sometime in the near future. Sounds like you've got a pretty good setup. And sorry you can't hang in there with us, Charlie. Charlie lives in Smithtown. Kind of amazed that he signs in by EchoLink as opposed to RF. He's an RF man from way back, and so with his ability to radiate a good strong signal. Surprised he's not using the algorithmic a little bit more often. Thank you for signing in tonight, Charlie. Already, looks like it's about as much information as we're going to get on Echo Link tonight, but Alan has my permission to come back as many times as he wants to. Next person on the list was Joe, KC2QIW. I think you had a question. You wanted to be added to the list. You got it, Joe. K2IW in the Tech Nest.
I don't have it on to a tree, but I actually have it from the wooden porch all the way out to the it's like a telephone pole. We used to use the pole for a clothesline, and what happens is the scrub will hang out on the porch and stuff, and they'll use the rope for the first time. Solid wire I bought the 14 size solid thin wire. My question is that would be the 14 inch thin, so I might have to return it for a thicker wire, I guess the 12 gauge solid wire back to the net.
Charlie, yes, I now realize you were coming into the eastern input of this machine, and it was an echo link. Joe, when it comes to the thickness of the wire, I was about to ask you, is it the dipole or the support structure, and I suddenly realized it doesn't matter. If it's really 14 gauge, in other words, the diameter of 14 gauge household copper wire, from my point of view, for most dipoles, more than thick enough, more than strong enough, for either support of the dipole or of the structure that holds it up in the air. So, do you have to go... The fact that you know somebody who has used 10-gauge, 8-gauge, or 6-gauge, it's nice to know you don't have to go there. There are guys who have built dipoles in order to make them invisible because their landlord wouldn't allow them to put up a dipole, and they've made it out of 30-gauge enameled wire. And works like a charm. Maybe they're a dB and a half lower because of distributed resistance of the wire being so small in diameter, and it affects the RF performance a little bit. And with 30-gauge wire, could you really put a key down kilowatt into it without burning it up? There, I'm not sure. But the cost of the materials is so light that even if the worst happens and you got to replace it, it's not the end of the world. So if you've really got what we call 14-gauge, which is, a little bit less than an eighth of an inch in diameter, I think that's heavy enough. And it doesn't matter whether it's a support structure, if it's made out of aluminum, if it's the dipole itself that's doing the radiating, there I do not recommend aluminum. Not because of the resistivity or the strength, just that the degree of difficulty of making a very good permanent outdoor electrical contact to aluminum wire dipole right at the junction of your feed line. That's a difficult requirement from my point of view. If you're doing aluminum spot welding, no problem. But every attempt I've ever done to do aluminum soldering, it doesn't survive outdoors.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
There are various people who have done aluminum connection by way of a compression connection of some kind. Wrap the wire around some kind of a connector with a screw going through it, with lots of no-locks and other kinds of weather protection. There are people who have done that successfully. But so, still, the bottom line is making good, permanent, high-conductivity electrical connection to aluminum wire is, in my opinion, troublesome. I guess also by the fact that a number of houses in the past on Long Island have burned down because the aluminum wiring in the house developed resistive contacts and eventually created heat in the wall that eventually created a fire. So electrical contacts in aluminum, it's a tough subject. Maybe I misunderstood you, but maybe that's what information you're looking for, Joe. KC2QIW, K2IW in the TechNet.
Jay, yes, what a comment about aluminum wiring.
copper wire, solid copper wire. Copper wire to tie up the dipole.
Vito recognized, and okay, using copper wire everywhere, I think 14 gauge is more than enough. Unless you're hanging a piece of 1.58 Andrew Heliax as the feed line at the center, and you've got to support the weight of it. A number of my friends are using 1.58 Andrew Heliax to feed their 432 antennas, and that's a really heavy piece of coax cable. That stuff is like $5 a foot and lots of pounds. But I know you're not going there. Now, Vito, I believe you had lots of instruction by way of the Home Depot company you work for and all the classes they've sent you to. So I bet you got some good suggestions on how to make electrical contact to aluminum wire as you got to. So give us the benefit of your education there, Vito. For the A2PJF, K2RIW in the tech net.
Comes into play. There are different devices that are made exclusively for aluminum. Let me drop.
Welcome to the W2VL repeater. The time is PM.
We do have switches, receptacles with aluminum screws on the side, not copper, that are conducive to the aluminum wiring. They are absolutely necessary to be used if you want to keep the aluminum wiring in usage in your home. If you want, like I did in my house, remove as much as you can, or use, do what is known as pigtailing, you turn a piece of copper to aluminum. There's an item, it's gray in color, I can't think of the name of it right now, that is put, when you put the wire nut on very gingerly because the aluminum is very soft and it does tend to snap, you pour this gray liquid in there. Oh, I can't get the name of it right now. It's got various names. And then that will prevent oxidation. Now, a better idea, there's a wire nut that's purple in color that is has this chemical, this solution in, built inside of it, and it's sealed, it's closed. And when you put the two wires in, you twist them together, put the cap on, it self-seals everything. And there, the oxidation does not prevail. But there's various different things that have come out. Let me drop. Can I continue?
Yes, you should, Vito. Go right ahead.
Because of the many different fires that have taken place in homes and wherever, we have vendors that come in with new product continuously, improvements on the problem, and ways to solutions to them. And these are a couple of the items that are available to the customer that we recommend most assuredly. As I said before, there's nothing wrong with aluminum wiring. It's only at the joints, the splices, where the sparks and the oxidation and the improper connections are made where the problems prevail, and there's where fires come into play. Back to you, sir.
That's information, Mayor Vito. I think Lolox is one of the brand names of that salve or glue of goo that they put in there, which prevents oxidation. And I think you said the wire nuts that have a gray cap, where the stuff is already built into it. I'm going to guess that that is a standard product at Home Depot. I'm going to pass it back to you in a minute for a confirmation on that. And so hopefully they're not out of stock. It's something that they have. A person who has aluminum wiring in his house, I guess he could put a small piece of copper wire coming off of the switch or the receptacle, then bring it over to his aluminum wire, twist the two together, and put on one of these gray wire nuts. That would be one possible approach, other than replacing all of the receptacles in the house. The other approach is replace the receptacles that are known to be compatible with aluminum wire. But even there, I would worry a little bit about the compression fitting eventually developing aluminum oxide. I'd be tempted to, even if I bought the exact correct receptacle made for aluminum wiring, I'd still, in my case, would be putting on belt and suspenders. I'd be putting on Nolox or another kind of anti-oxidizing solution at that junction to try to make double darn sure it doesn't develop a scratchy contact. One of the problems I think that happens with aluminum wiring is that with the thermal cycling that you get, with the wiring running a little bit warm when you put it under heavy load and then cooling off, the aluminum has got a much higher rate of expansion and contraction, and I think it eventually works its way loose under the screw. But maybe I'm wrong on that one. Back to you for any further words on this one, Vito. To be 2PJF, our Home Depot expert. Thank you. K2LIW in the tech man.
Have a comment, 2PJF.
John recognized, but Vito first. Go ahead, Vito.
Yes, Dick. The screws getting loose is a common problem we've had in reference to things of that nature. It happens with copper wire as well. We do have customers come in the store making comment that they've lost several rooms in their home that's no longer functioning, and the circuit breaker is fine, the voltage is leaving the circuit breaker, but the rooms aren't working. And of course the problem is an open leg, whether it be neutral or the hot leg, the activated leg, in the run, which is either upstream, midstream, or downstream. Downstream is furthest from the fuse panel. And due to a screw coming loose, another thing also which is not recommended to do anymore is plugging in a wire in the back of the receptacle and not using the screws at all. That also is another issue, and especially aluminum wiring, it does break off. We lose continuity there. The color of the caps are purple, not gray. We have gray ones for a different application, strictly for copper, but these are purple with the, called grip ball, or what you said, the other names, various names, only inside the cap that is closed, and you puncture the cap with the two wires, and it seals around it. Yes, you're right about the aluminum devices. Let me drop. The ability of oxidation will prevail, even though the aluminum device is what's properly being used with aluminum wiring. So I tell individuals that, again, put this gray matter on the screws. You know, cover everything, cover the wire before you put it in the wall. The reason being it cuts out the air, stifles it, and retards. I can't say it's going to stop entirely, but retards the oxidation process, which the white powder, and soon the thing breaks, but it slows it down immensely. But it's little possible that wiring should be removed. Also, the aluminum wire is reused. Let me drop. It was used in harness because it was a few pennies that may have been cheaper in price versus copper. So that's one of the reasons. Also, another thing about aluminum, as you already know, it's a poor conductor of electricity, electron flow versus copper. And if you were to look at a 12-gauge piece of copper wire versus that in aluminum, the aluminum looks like a 10-gauge wire. It's much thicker. So that's another issue as well. Whatever you ask, these are the problems that are... Well, issues, I use that language, of aluminum wiring, but properly addressed, that it could be, we can get a handle on it. So, back to you.
Thank you, Nudo Beetle. Good information. And so, to my knowledge, in homes these days, no longer do they install aluminum wire for the last decade or so. In the older homes, there was a period of time, I'm going to guess around 1970 or so, when a lot of houses did have aluminum wiring. Copper is now the